Count your blessings, ladies and gentlemen, because this is Brian Pillman Jr., and you're listening to the most influential podcast. You're listening to the Pro Wrestling Proverbs.
This has kind of been, how would you say? It's been a long time coming. We were supposed to do this before we went to StarCast. We were actually supposed to do this shortly after we came back from Astronomicon. You know, better late than never, they always say. Before really getting into it, I will be using some direct quotes today. Thank you to WWE's Rise and Fall of WCW. Documentary DVD, one of their better ones. Thank you to Dusty, Reflection of Wrestling's American Dream, Dusty Rhodes' book, and thank you to Death of the Territories by Tim Hornbaker. Another good little book teaching you about, you know, some territories. Maybe learn about some things that might have been featured in a scripture or two. Who knows? But are you very familiar with Jim Crockett Promotions?
Yeah, I know of them, obviously.
I mean, we went to their most recent showcase.
Yeah, they're the only one that's mattered so far, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, what's cool about it, I don't remember if I mentioned this on here, just offhand, before doing StarCast, Conrad Thompson bought the rights to use Jim Crockett Promotions from WWE. And after StarCast, he gave David Crockett 50% of it back. So now the Crocketts own JCP again. So, I mean, good job, Conrad. You know, you could have handled your lines a little better, but, you know, help David Crockett out, so that's good. But I mean, it's good that the Crockett family got the promotion back in their name, because Jim Crockett Promotion really started early 30s, between 33 and 35. It was their dad, Jim Crockett Sr. He promoted boxing, roller derby, the Globetrotters, country and western circuses, but it wasn't until that 1935 year that he started doing wrestling. A lot of times you'll hear me interchange here. Jim Crockett Promotions and Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. They're one and the same. Mid-Atlantic is what the wrestling show was called. While Jim Crockett is obviously who promoted it. It's like how you've got Titan Sports would do the WWF. Turner Broadcasting would do WCW. Just one and the same. Senior promoted until 1973. April 1st of all days, you know, probably thought it was a cruel April Fool's joke. Until that point, until his death, he actually booked right next door to Vince McMahon Senior. It was the Washington, D.C. area where the line was Drew. Vince McMahon actually said that from what he understood about Jim Crockett, he was a great promoter and a pretty good guy at that. I mean, coming from Vince, the fact that there wasn't, like, a backhanded remark, good on him. He didn't know the guy, and his dad worked with him more, so I'm sure there's a little bit of fear, but all in all, nothing too spectacular from Senior. The promotion really didn't kick off until his sons took over. You had David, who's still with us. He was actually at StarCast, one of the announcers for the event. And then you've got Jim Jr., who passed away a few years ago. David ran the company, while Jr. ran the wrestling aspect of it, and he became the face of the company, the president. They determined early on that the wrestlers needed someone to look at as the authority figure. So that's why he eventually became the president of the company. I mean, had to have been a nice gig, right? Your brother's doing all the other work, your bookers are doing the other work, and you're just the face, you're just the guy that's like, you, stop that.
Just free almost, voting.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like a certain wrestling promotion nowadays could use, you know, a stern authority figure like that. I don't know who that'd be.
But, I can't think of one.
Yeah. George Scott was brought in as a booker. George Scott used to be a wrestler. I think he still wrestles today. It's crazy how long that man's been doing this industry. And, you know, Jim Crockett, the 70s, they brought it back. It was kind of... It's eerie how their dad died at the 40th anniversary. So then when they rebranded, they got to say it was the 40th year. They would do the television tapings, usually North Carolina, South Carolina region, hence the Mid-Atlantic name. Then you would have... This is when they brought in Bob Caudill, who was a recognizable announcing figure. The only one that really topped him in the area was when you had Jim Ross there, or eventually Tony Schiavone. But then... really, Jim Crockett got reinvented with the invention of cable. You always hear TBS, Channel 17. It was a two-block time, 6:05 to 8:05 Eastern, every Saturday. From what was said, they would put on shows before and after the wrestling to kind of give a little ratings boost, which makes sense. You see that a lot nowadays. Like when they brought Young Sheldon out, they put it on right before the Big Bang Theory. So that way, even if you don't plan on watching Young Sheldon, you turn your TV to the channel, you see a little bit of it. You might get interested, you might not, but it'll still be a nice little ratings boost.
Got pop a rating.
Yep, that's, I mean, even then, you hear all the time how you hear from Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes and News Live all the time how Ted Turner just, you know, he was cable before cable was cool. He was the big one when it came to bringing wrestling to the forefront. We'll get into a little later when we talk about the Von Erichs. It's kind of interesting how close Jim Crockett and the Von Erichs both were to beating McMahon, being like the mainstream wrestling show, and it all had to do with cable and broadcasting. Jim Crockett Jr. liked to say that Mid-Atlantic was the first real regional territory, which, I mean, I guess you could say that. A lot of territories, when they still were territories, would usually be one state, or like an area in a state, San Francisco, Houston. You had big-time wrestling, which was Michigan, a little bit of Ohio. You had the AWA, which had Minnesota. But this was the first one that kind of spanned a little bit from its main area. I've got a list here of superstars that wrestled from Mid-Atlantic. I mean, it's a who's who of the NWA wrestling era. Johnny Valentine, Wahoo McDaniel, both Briscoes, the Koloffs, Don Kernoodle, Gene and Ole Anderson, before eventually Arn would join them, Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, Harley Race, Terry and Dory Funk, Backlund, James J. Dillon, Ricky Steamboat, the Rock and Roll Express, and then eventually Magnum T.A., the Midnight Express, Tully Blanchard as well. Gordon Solie was another big voice for the company. I mean, when you think of AEW today, and I know I keep making the comparisons here, but you've got Jim Ross, you've got Tony Schiavone, you've got Taz, Jericho was a good announcer, for some reason people like Excalibur. Jim Crockett was kind of this at that time. Because again, you had Caudill, you had Ross, you had Schiavone, you had Crockett, you had Gordon Solie. I mean, Dusty Rhodes would jump on every so often. It was really a good era, not only for wrestling, but for announcing. The big question was, as Jim Crockett was expanding, which again, another comparison to AEW now, the question was, where's all the talent going to go? Are they going to go up to Madison Square Garden and make a paycheck, which was the WWF, eventually WWF? Or are they going to go to the Carolinas and make a paycheck? Which, again, it's now you're going to go to WWE, you're going to go to AEW. You can go elsewhere and wrestle, but you're not really going to make that money. It was interesting at the time because, again, being a regional territory growing, Jim Crockett Promotion was seen as the booking agent for, as Jim Jr. said, the big dogs. So this would be your Ric Flair, your Harley Race, your Arn Anderson, Andre the Giant to an extent. That's why you'd see them in other territories. They would do trades, kind of like a developmental thing. I'll send you this guy, you send me this guy. It would keep the talent fresh. It's something that I still think should be used today. I think it'd make wrestling a little more fresh if you didn't see the same faces at the same place week after week. We're kind of getting away from that with, again, WWE and AEW fighting over that talent. The biggest help that the Crocketts had was Dusty Rhodes. Jim Crockett said that Dusty understood the idea of the big event better than most people. And Ric Flair said that Jimmy Crockett had the vision because Dusty gave it to him. A lot of the wrestlers from that time, you'll hear that they really didn't think too highly of Jim Crockett, that most of the ideas, most of the work actually came from Dusty. Again, not to keep... Yeah, I mean, the Dusty finish. And then I mentioned the big event, the first big one. You figure Starrcade 83. November 24th. This was, ironically enough, the main event was Ric Flair and Harley Race. And I say it's ironic because Ric Flair was taken out before this and he was, quote-unquote, contemplating retirement. 1983. This is the first time. You figure we just saw him wrestle his last match in 2022. So, you know, if you round up, yeah. The matches on the card were the Assassins defeating Rufus Jones and Bugsy McGraw, Kevin Sullivan and Mark Lewin defeating Scott McGee and Johnny Weaver, Abdullah the Butcher defeating Carlos Colon, Bob Orton Jr. and Dick Slater defeating Mark Youngblood and Wahoo McDaniel, Charlie Brown defeating the Great Kabuki in a title versus mask match for the NWA title, or the TV title, excuse me. Roddy Piper versus Greg Valentine in that famous dog collar match. Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood defeating the Briscoe Brothers. And then Ric Flair defeating Harley Race for this NWA title in a steel cage with former NWA champion Gene Kaninsky as the special referee. I mean, this was the first real... You can't call it a pay-per-view because there's not some closed circuits, but this was the first big wrestling event. I mean, it even had more than just Jim Crockett there. The Carlos Colon Abdullah match came from the WWC in Puerto Rico. It's later found out that Vince actually offered Harley Race to walk out on the NWA and join the WWF. He offered him $250,000. Again, 1983. That would have been a nice chunk of change for Harley, but he stayed. He decided not to go. But with all good things, usually some bad comes up. And as Starrcade happened, but some kind of middle-of-the-road fans, some casual fans don't realize, is that Vince McMahon actually purchased GCW, which was the flagship show for Jim Crockett Promotion, back in 1984.
This was called, wasn't this called Black Monday?
This was Black Saturday.
Saturday, yes.
Yep.
Black Monday's in the NFL.
Yeah, July 14th, 1984. The majority came from the Briscoe Brothers, which the rumor was they got lifetime contracts from WWE after this. This was proven not true. But what this did was this gave Vince the Turner time slot. And this was the first time that he truly tried to take over. He brought his up north pro wrestling to the down south wrestling. And it just, the fans didn't click. Jim Crockett Jr. kind of went around and asked Ted Turner how to get the time slot back. This was on a handshake deal, as you'll hear a lot of times Vince McMahon would have back in those times. And Vince on the matter said, I don't know what political stress was planned out, but Ted wanted out of the deal. Our handshake after this is when I had a falling out with Ted Turner. Another interesting little note on this is Jim Crockett had to pay Vince McMahon for the time slot to get it back. They paid him about $1 million, which, if you remember, this is 83. What came in about 84, 85? That's right, WrestleMania. So, Jim Crockett Promotions, which was the NWA and eventually became WCW, essentially paid for the first WrestleMania. Which...
That must sting a little bit.
It was this chain of events that would eventually cause Turner to buy Jim Crockett Promotions and form WCW in 1988. But, even though that happened, as Arn Anderson said, in 85 it was getting ready to explode. DBS was doing so well that they took shows away from the Carolinas. They went to Texas, Chicago, California. They did the large stadium tours. I'm sure you've seen videos and clips of the Great American Bash where Ric Flair comes out in the helicopter. The Legion of Doom walks the whole field. As Dusty says, they were living like rock stars. At this time is when Magnum TA came into the fold. Magnum TA was going to be the future of professional wrestling. With a name like Magnum, he of course had the mustache, he had the long hair, he had the muscles, he trained in Mid-South. He had it all. He was talking about being a world champion. He was gonna, again, ironically enough, 84, 85, he's gonna take the belt from Ric Flair and it would be a passing of the torch moment. No, Ric was gonna leave wrestling soon. Unfortunately, though, Magnum TA got in that very crucial motorcycle accident, took him out of wrestling. He ended up doing some commentary for a bit, but never returned to the ring. This was a big blow to Jim Crockett and the NWA, having their biggest talent, their most promising future star, taken away from them. And on top of that, but besides Magnum leaving, Arn Anderson said that if Jim Crockett Promotions would have stayed within their original parameters, they would still be in business today. So losing your top star, trying to expand too fast, again, it's kind of sounding a little similar to something, isn't it?
Kind of familiar. Sounds like something somebody would do.
I don't know what, though.
Did Ric Flair call anybody a empty-headed dumbfuck? Probably.
I mean, I don't think a wrestler, but he did call the one promoter it when he wanted him to shave his head, put an earring in, and call himself Spartacus. So, I mean...
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, who cares about Ric Flair? Let's make him Spartacus. It was about this time Jim Crockett Jr. admits he probably wasn't the businessman he needed to be. So one of the big things that they would do that if you were a wrestler then you loved it, but looking back on it now you probably don't, they would base themselves out of Las Vegas. So they'd fly into Vegas on a Thursday, gamble, drink, do whatever they want. Friday they'd fly to California, have their matches, fly back to Vegas. Do whatever they want. Next day, fly to Texas, then fly back to Vegas when they were done on private jets that were paid for by the company. With this, all the wrestlers not really having a business background, because again, the two sons took over from their dad. They actually were running deposit to deposit. They were having a meeting after selling out the Greensboro Coliseum. It was Jim Crockett, Dusty, I think Flair, probably Luger. And the bookkeeper ran in and told them, which again, this is after they sold out the Greensboro Coliseum, that they were $5 million in the hole.
That's not too much.
No, never. And again, this was late 80s, so I mean, that would be what in today's money?
In today's money? I can do a math for you real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious how much...
What year exactly was it again?
This would have been probably, I'll say around 88.
So, 5 million. That's equivalent to 12,522,231.
Oh. That's not too bad.
That's an increase of 7.5 mil over 34 years. And a 4.14 inflation rate. There you go.
Many people feel that a business manager should have been brought in. Ric Flair, again, agreeing with Arn Anderson, says that JCP should have stayed between Baltimore and Chicago. They'd still be in business today. This is then when the selling talks happened. They were supposed to, Ted Turner wanted to purchase the company. Ted Turner loved wrestling. That's the story you'll always hear. But Jim Crockett with WCW. Ted Turner loved wrestling, but the moment that he was taken out of power, that is when the company wanted nothing to do with wrestling. Even back then, they didn't understand why the ratings were so good. It's a fake sport. It's a gruesome sport. No one should be watching this. Why is it doing well in our network? Dave Crockett says that he fought the sale, but they pulled the mother card on him. They had the mom go talk to him, tell him that they need to sell, because Jim Crockett says that if they wouldn't have sold, they would not have survived. Dave Crockett thought he was in a good spot. Even though he sold, he was giving a 5-year consulting agreement. And he would still be able to announce, he'd still be able to produce. I mean, 5 years, with how long they'd already been doing it, that's quite a career. Except for the fact that, he announced and produced for 3 weeks. And then he was cut.
Hey, because you got to, you know.
This wasn't the first real wrestling promotion of Jim Crockett's that had been bought out or had failed. In 1982, Ric Flair, Blackjack Mulligan, and Jim Crockett Jr. tried doing Southern Championship Wrestling. It only lasted for a year. It helped introduce Barry Windham and Magnum TA, but still didn't really work out. This is not where the Jim Crockett promotion story ends, though. Although they could not promote for 7 years after Turner bought him out in 1988 due to the contract, Jim Crockett did try to come back as with the World Wrestling Network, which would be the building block for ECW. Superstars like Road Warrior Hawk, Jake Roberts, Paul Heyman, Terry Funk, Shane Douglas, and Sabu were all brought into the fold. There's a shoot interview out there where this is around the time that Paul Heyman left WCW. He didn't want anything to do with wrestling. He supposedly was going to do a radio show and go head-to-head with Howard Stern. And Jim Crockett called him up, asked him if he'd want to be involved. Paul Heyman said, no, I'm trying to get away from wrestling. And Jim Crockett laced into him and told him, you're just like everyone else. You don't want to fight Vince. You're scared. I knew you were a chicken shit. This obviously got under Paul's skin because he came back to ECW. And besides the little break in between his WWE tenures, he has not been away from the business since. Unfortunately, even though this had Crockett at the helm, Heyman's help, and the superstars needed, it just couldn't get on TV. I mean, you would think that if a company has all these superstars, some good money backing, some bookers, it shouldn't be too hard to get on TV, right?
I don't think so. It should be pretty easy.
I mean, it's interesting. And I mean, as of 93. The company was World Championship Wrestling. Jim Crockett ceased to exist. Fun fact about the final nail in the coffin is that originally, as Jim Crockett Promotions was getting built up, he actually teamed with Frank Tunney to show some shows in Canada, to be able to, you know, show their events in Canada, eventually have cable in Canada. And if the name Tunney reminds you of anything, it's because Jack Tunney, who was the on-screen president of the WWF, when he joined forces with the WWF, Crockett lost their last willing partner. So, literally almost any way that you look at it, the WWF is what killed Jim Crockett Promotion, whether it be the talent getting taken, the $1 million for Mania, or Tunney leaving.
I just think it's super funny that that's just what you said. WWF just stole all their talent, all their and then they paid for the show that is now the biggest wrestling show ever, the most watched by millions of people.
Say, I didn't touch on the talent because that's something that's been hit on the head so many times.
And they did it to everybody. WWF did it to everybody.
It wasn't just Jim Crockett. I mean, Jim Crockett did it to others when they were forming their promotion.
Yeah, everybody did it to everybody, but since WWF was successful at it and like they're the big guys now, it's like, oh, the devil.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon did it.
But this story does not end on a negative note like so many do. As I mentioned earlier, Jim Crockett Promotions came back when Ric Flair came out to the ring for the last time on July 31st, 2022. And Jim Crockett Promotions was back. And with David Crockett getting 50%, I mean, there's always a chance they could run more shows. There's a chance that they could promote shows. I mean, think about if they go to the Carolinas. Jim Crockett Promotions presents AEW Dynamite. Just something. Because, I mean, with that name behind it, the wrestling fans will love it. This is one of those situations where Jim Crockett had everything going his way. He had the talent. He had the legacy in the name. He had the money backing him. But because of just the little mistakes in expansion and in business, it crumbled. So, I mean, take this as a warning, if you will. That's why I said I don't truly ever compare AEW to WCW. At this point, it's a comparison to Jim Crockett. And we heard it from Tony Khan at the press conference. He's got more money than Jim Crockett, so he's not going to stand for this shit. Hopefully he's right. And hopefully in 20 years we don't have a rise and fall of AEW. Or, I mean, even in 20 years we're not talking about a rise and fall of AEW on this podcast.
I can't wait to do that show.
I mean, like I said, there's so many little reasons as to why they closed. It's kind of sad, a family promotion, the love from the superstars there, the love from the fans. But I mean, when you pay your competition $1 million, in the 80s, probably not going to last too long. Definitely the rise, the steep fall, with a little bit of positivity at the end We were there for the positivity.
The power of positivity.